Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Chalk up another casualty to the economic crisis of 2008, the American Orchestra. Throughout the 90s, major orchestras grew inside of an economic bubble of their own, with donors and corporations funding generous contracts for musicians, underwriting new concert halls, and popular programs to court bigger audiences. That bubble has since burst, exposing some of the nation's premier institutions to bankruptcies, foreclosures, lockouts, and strikes. Philip Kennicott is art and architecture critic for The Washington Post. He wrote about the current crises facing America's orchestras for New Republic. And Philip, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So we just gave a very brief sketch of what's going on in broad strokes for some of America's orchestras. Could you fill us in on some of the specifics?
Well, you mentioned the economic crisis of 2008, and what that did is expose and exacerbate some of the deeper structural economic problems that orchestras were facing. One of them is that, of course, like almost all nonprofit arts institutions, orchestras don't make money. Everything they do has to be supported by donors. Ticket sales don't cover anywhere near the full costs of an orchestra. Orchestras have what we would call huge fixed costs, meaning they have pensions and salaries that they have to pay. So it's always a race for them to be able to fund their basic operations. But what was also happening is that there's been a longer cultural shift away from the old habit of buying a subscription to orchestras. It used to be, maybe 20, 30 years ago, that you would buy a subscription sometime in the spring or summer for the following season, and you would commit to going to 8 or 10 or 15 concerts. And that gave orchestras a lot of stability financially. It let them kind of put some money in the bank at the beginning of the season and spread it out over the coming months. But it also let them balance their programming so that there were interesting, familiar works that people would want to hear every year, the symphonies of Beethoven or Mahler, perhaps. But then they could also program a few more interesting things that might be slightly more challenging to listeners. And it did something that I sort of call artistic socialism in that New Republic piece. It spread the risk around over various different audiences who all gathered maybe for different reasons, but ultimately heard the same rather diverse and interesting programs.
Not all American orchestras are in dire straits. Are there any, however, on the endangered list, you think, at this point?
Well, I wrote this piece after attending the annual conference of the League of American Orchestras in St. Louis, and there was a lot of dark muttering about some of the biggest, most important orchestras, some of the big five orchestras, those being New York and Cleveland, Chicago, and so on, Boston. Now, those orchestras don't particularly want to talk about their financial crisis. So rather than just spreading rumors, we can go back to the ones where there clearly have been major issues, the most prominent of which is the Philadelphia Orchestra. Again, one of the big five, one of these classic American institutions that's been around for decades and decades, a huge impact on American cultural life. And they had to declare bankruptcy and do some restructuring to get back to the point where they could be on a stable footing again.
This concert that you attended was also a 20-year anniversary of something called Americanizing the American Orchestra. And I'm wondering, how is the American Orchestra defined today, and how has that evolved over the past 20 years?
Well, that remains a huge subject of conversation at gatherings like the League of American Orchestras annual conference. That document, which came out in 1993, looked ahead at some of the problems that people could see coming. It looked ahead at what would the audience be 10 years, 20 years down the line? Would it be diverse? Would it sort of keep up with the changing demographics of American society? And so they proposed a lot of possible solutions to the crisis that they could see really coming down the road. And the broad term for that was to Americanize the American orchestra, which for the managers and the authors of that document meant moving it away from what was perceived to be a kind of traditional old guard, maybe even slightly stuffy European model, to a much more open, diverse American model. Now, something strange happened in the 20 years that document has been around. Some would say that that document was enormously successful and that American orchestras really have made a great deal of progress towards being more American. Others would say, and I probably come down a little bit more in this camp, that what was perceived as being American was a changing of the orchestra's mission that has now gotten many groups rather far away from the thing that orchestras do really well, which is to perform a canon of music that's been around for a couple of hundred years and that was written for the orchestra. Orchestras are now trying to be all things to all people. They're doing a lot more targeted nights that involve popular acts and movies and organs and repertoire that is interesting and has a clientele, but doesn't really fit very well with what orchestras evolved to do.
You detail some of the history of the American orchestra and the ways that it has tried to popularize itself to appeal to an audience. So this isn't absolutely new.
No, it's not new. And one of the things that people point out who have a longer history of the American orchestra is that if you went to an orchestra concert in the time of, say, Mark Twain, it could be a pretty wild affair. You might have a medley of popular patriotic songs, a movement of a Beethoven symphony, and maybe something that wasn't strictly music at all, something from the world of dance or a poetry reading or a monologue from Shakespeare. They were much more kind of wild and diverse evenings of entertainment.
You just alluded to orchestras kind of homogenizing, let's say, their repertoire or trying to meet a lot of different tastes. And this has alienated a lot of serious listeners. I'm curious about what represents a dumbing down for the American Symphony Orchestra.
What I was writing was a very personal essay about looking at the programs for the coming seasons of orchestras around the country and asking myself, if I was in town, if I was sitting in a hotel and I had a free evening, would I buy a ticket and go and hear that? And it seemed to me rather disturbing that my answer was no in a lot of cases, that there wasn't really much to interest me. What you were seeing were, as some examples, the Indigo Girls, music of the Matrix, the Texas Tenors.
Power up for two totally explosive concerts at Davie Symphony Hall. Don't miss Video Games Live, the multimedia spectacular with new music from Halo, Final Fantasy, Super Mario Brothers, and more. And hear the soundtrack from cyberpunk classic The Matrix perform live as you watch the full-length movie on the big screen. Fasten your seatbelts. You've never heard the symphony like this.
And that bothered me because when I go to a city, I like to go to the art museum. I like to get on a bus. I like to sit in a city park. I like to check out the library. But increasingly, even though I'm a very serious music lover and I adore the orchestral repertoire, I haven't really had occasion to go to the orchestra in a lot of smaller American towns. And that means that the orchestra as a civic institution for people who are kind of hardcore serious listeners is becoming a bit of a hard sell, and I think that's a real problem.
I want to go back to something that you said, Philip, about the reputation being stuffy, you know, of orchestra goers. Well, accurate or not, going to the symphony is seen as something for the elite, you know, something that old and wealthy people do. So what does the American orchestra have to offer that makes it important to preserve or to intervene in this crisis?
What it has is a legacy of some of the greatest music that's ever been created. You know, it's almost amazing that one has to sort of justify why this is important to preserve. It's the same reason that we have libraries, the same reason that we have museums, and it's the same reason that people still keep painting paintings and writing books. It's a means of human expression. Now, it's true that it is perceived by many people that that legacy is increasingly of interest to a smaller and smaller audience, and increasingly that's an older audience. But if you look at orchestras that have been successful at kind of maintaining serious and interesting and diverse programming in places like Boston and San Francisco and Los Angeles, you can get younger audiences and you can get new audiences. What's important is that you put it in a context where that music can be comprehended and understood in its historical context, and that you do nothing that's unnecessarily snobby to turn people away. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily sacrifice some of the evolved customs and etiquette of the concert hall, which without those habits, it's very hard for somebody who's new to the music to come in and actually get out of that music all of the greatness that's in it.
Philip Kennicott, art and architecture critic for The Washington Post, thanks so much for your time.
It was my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Philip wrote an article for The New Republic called America's Orchestras Are in Crisis, and you'll find a link to read it and comment on it, if you'd like, at wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd like to know what you think. When was the last time that you went to see your local orchestra?